Hi everyone, this is Martin, and I'm in San Francisco with Paul Gilmartin, who is here for Sketchfest.
Sketchfest, that's right.
And how are you doing, Paul?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Thank you.
And Paul is a stand-up comedian, and he's also on Dinner in a Movie. He's been on that since when?
Since 1995.
1995.
Yeah.
And I've watched that many times. Paul also makes Danish modern furniture. So, Paul, why don't you go into how you started making Danish modern furniture?
Well, I started out woodworking in high school and just loved it. The first time I walked into a shop, it just felt like home. I loved the smell of it. Mm. I loved everything about it. But I didn't have any tools of my own, so when I graduated high school, you know, I didn't woodwork again. Flash forward to 2003. I started doing some stuff around. I'm not handy, but I decided that I was going to fix up our bathroom a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so I bought a couple of tools, and next thing I know, I had a couple more tools, and next thing I knew, I had a table saw, and next thing I knew, I transformed the our garage into a wood shop, and I started making basic stuff, cutting boards, mm-hmm. boxes, things like that. But my real love of furniture is Danish modern, and that round, organic feel. I've always loved wood. I've played guitar since I was 14, and I've always just been drawn to things that are beautiful and made out of wood, but particularly like the chairs of Finjul, what is the chair? The one that Hans Wegner made. They call it the chair, like NV45 or something, or am I thinking of Finjul? But anyway, it's the one that just has, this one that Kennedy delivered his State of the Union address in. It's just so clean and perfect, yet it's organic looking. It looks like somebody had to shape it by hand. And so the more techniques I learned in woodworking, the more I wanted to get away from the boxy kind of stuff. And
which is much more the rounded, anything rounded is, anyone that's ever done any woodworking,
yes,
is very difficult.
Very difficult. And you know, that's one of the things that amazes me about the furniture that they made back then is the scale that they produced it on. Just to do one, to get two arms to look alike on a chair. Mm-hmm. And I haven't even progressed to chairs yet.
Chairs are extremely
difficult because there's so many compound angles, and then you throw in the fact that you want stuff round as well.
Yeah.
I have furniture that inspires me, and I just kind of take what I like from it, and a lot of times it's driven by something that I'll want for the house. I'm always a little sad when Christmas is over because the lights go away, and I've always loved that glow. Mm-hmm. And so I was sitting in, and I also love the glow of guitar amplifiers, how they glow in the dark. And I thought, why don't I build furniture that glows? I love Japanese lights. Mm-hmm. So I came up with the idea of building Danish end tables where the front, instead of having a drawer or a space to store stuff, would be Japanese paper, and then the light would be housed inside of it. And that way, at night, watching TV with the lights off, you'd have this kind of warm ambient glow of your furniture. And so then I just kind of set out, well, what do I want them to look like? How do I make that? I had no idea how to make a lamp. So I had to learn how to do all those things. But it was so satisfying when, a year later, I'm sitting in my living room, and I go and I turn the DVD cabinet, flick it on, and it has this glow, and flick on the little end table, and it's got this glow. And it's a really satisfying thing. That's one of the things that I love about woodworking is the problem-solving aspect of
it. Sure.
So, that's kind of where I'm at today.
Yeah. Now, when you found out how to put lighting in, was that searching different ways to do that as far as the heat in the panel.
Yeah, because I discovered quickly that incandescent doesn't work because it generates too much heat, even a low wattage one. But fortunately, compact fluorescent bulbs were kind of coming on the scene, or maybe they've been around for a while, but I had just become aware of them. And they don't generate the heat that incandescent do, and they're a lot more energy efficient too. So I put either those or LED lights in the stuff that I make. And the other thing that excites me about the end table is the top comes off, so you can access the light to change it, but also the frame slides out, the wooden frame that the light is behind, you know. So you can put in different frame and paper combinations.
Now, you make everything by hand.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I have machines, but...
Yeah, it's not... There's no, like, jigs or things like that. But you also use solid woods, no plywood.
No, I don't. I have built stuff with plywood, and, you know, I'm sure I will build stuff with plywood again, but...
It's a lot easier.
Plywood is easier, but it has a kind of a soulless quality because you can't round it.
Yeah.
Because everything has to be 90 degrees. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, and I'm sure you know this being in antiques, is plywood... Your great-grandchildren are not going to get to enjoy furniture made out of plywood because that veneer, the veneers that they make nowadays are 1/64 of an inch or, 1/32 of an inch. Mm-hmm. So you get a ding on that and that's done.
Yeah.
You know, when I make a table out of a, inch and a half thick slab of Clara walnut, when I drop it off at the person's house that I made it for, they're always nervous about scratching it, or I say no, this is meant to be used, and if you ever need it refinished, the great thing is I could just take a sander to it and refinish it.
That's right. You don't have to worry about going through the veneer.
Yeah, and some of my favorite woodworkers were that way about their furniture too. They weren't precious about it. They wanted it to be utilitarian. Sam Maloof is one great American woodworker. His stuff's in the Smithsonian. Mm. His rockers go for about, that's kind of his signature piece. His rockers go for like $40,000. Mm. George Nakashima was my other favorite.
Yeah. I was just talking about him in a podcast that's up just now.
Yeah. His stuff really, really inspired me.
There's really some amazing things. Yeah. And when I very first came to California, I very first started working in an auction house.
Uh-huh.
I walked into a place that was loaded with Nakashima.
Wow.
And I had no idea what it was.
Yeah.
And they told me, they said, well, the Nakashima furniture is not going anywhere. It's already, spoken for, but everything else was for sale. So when I went back to the auction gallery and I told them, I said, this stuff was like big slabs and it's really cool.
Yeah.
And, I found out quickly what it is. And
and
then the owner of the auction gallery was on me constantly to go back and try to get the furniture.
Yeah.
Out of those people.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Nobody, it's beautiful. It sounds kind of cheesy, but nobody honors the tree the way George Nakashima does. Nobody, we live in such an industrialized world where everything looks like it was spit out by a machine. There's something really soothing to me about sitting in my living room and looking over at my coffee table, which is a slab of wood, and it has the freeform edges, and just knowing that it's made by hand.
Yeah. Now, I've heard that Nakashima took like years sometimes looking at a piece of wood to use. Someone else said that earlier, and I had also heard that someone in Oakland that had a piece, there was a Civil War bullet in the bottom side.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was still in the bottom side of the table.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've come across nails and stuff that I made. I made stuff out of camphor. A friend of mine in Los Angeles had a camphor tree that died, and so I was like, well, let me, can I have some of the wood? And he's like, sure. So I dried it for 2 years and then made some stuff out of it. But, I came across a nail that had obviously been in the tree when the tree was young because it had grown around it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think almost every woodworker has this obsession with wood because there are so many varieties of wood, and each one has its own pluses and minuses.
Mm-hmm.
and they all have their own personality, and some are really expensive. So, like, I have a slab of Cuban mahogany. As you know, mm-hmm. Cuban mahogany was what, you know, Chippendale made his furniture out yeah. of, and it was harvested to the point of extinction. So you really can't get any anymore unless somebody, a tree falls in Florida, then you can get it. Or mm-hmm. if somebody has tears something down that was made out of it, and apparently during Hurricane Andrew or something, this bar washed up on shore, mm-hmm. and it's this 3-inch thick, 6-foot long, 14-inch wide slab of Cuban mahogany that I don't know if I'll ever feel like I'm a good enough woodworker to use it for something, but mm-hmm. I totally get that yeah. having certain pieces of wood, and that to yeah. me, that's the fun when you start a project, is, you know, that's kind of your palette. So mm-hmm. I love the days when I just kind of walk around the wood shop and I look at the different slabs of wood and think, what do I want to make this table out of? What would be an interesting combination? Especially if it's a wood you've never worked with before, and yeah. suddenly you're like, wow, this thing's destroying my drill bit or my yeah. saw blade.
Well, camphor wood has a real strong odor.
It's fantastic. In fact, when I would go into the shop, I would purposely sand a little of it just so mm-hmm. I could get that.
Yeah.
That. Well, I've mentholated odor.
I like walnut. I like working with walnut. Yeah. I've done a bit of woodworking. And why don't you tell, you use some unusual exotic woods in your furniture.
I do. The more recently I've tried to be more conscientious about whether or not the wood is sustainable. When I first started woodworking, I didn't really think about that, and I just bought mm-hmm. all the stuff that I thought was cool. So I mostly, if I'm going to buy something new nowadays, I'll mostly stick with North American hardwoods. I'll, you know, stick with mm-hmm. maple and walnut and oaks and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. East Indian rosewood, I love. Mm.
It's beautiful.
It's so beautiful. Mm. And it's an oily wood, so it's kind of mm-hmm. difficult to finish. There's you got to seal it to make sure. I didn't know that the first time I made something out of it. All of a sudden, all this resin or oil started coming mm-hmm. to the surface and blotched up my my finished job. You know, you learn so much by screwing up.
Trial and error.
But East Indian rosewood I love. I happened to pick up a bunch of rejected guitar necks that Fender didn't want because really? They were either too small or there was a ding in it or something. So I've got mm-hmm. this huge stack of fretboard size really? East Indian rosewood. So I like to accent stuff with it when I can.
Now, have you tried any type of inlay? Have you?
Yes. Yeah. Actually, that's one of the woods I used. Mm-hmm. The bar that the first big project I built when I was 18 for my final project in cabinet making class was a bar, because I figured I'm going to college next year. Mm-hmm. What's the one piece of furniture I'm definitely going to need?
And portable bar.
A portable bar. But I made so many mistakes on it. You know, I had the grain oriented the wrong way, so, you know, it's split in the corners. Oh. Mm-hmm. But the top I made out of red oak, and after it being around for 20 years, soaking up all kinds of stains and stuff, I thought, let me send this through the planer. And that's one of my favorite things to do, is refinishing stuff for people. Mm-hmm. You know, something out of solid wood, and the top of it's all nasty. Mm-hmm. And you send it through the planer, and it is like a brand new piece of wood that just mm-hmm. came from the lumber yard. Mm-hmm. And that's where I tried my first inlay. I inlaid some, I think, Padauk and East Indian rosewood into it. But very, very simple kind of inlay. Mm-hmm. I'm not very, I don't have much proficiency as far as inlay. As long as it's kind of straight and square, I can do it.
Well, it's very, very difficult when you get into any type of, you know, marquetry or anything.
Oh, my God. I have so much respect for those guys. Yeah. They are obsessed, the guys that do that. You have to be, because the amount of detail and patience, mm-hmm. that to me, that is the most important quality in woodworking. Is patience, because almost mm-hmm. every really bad mistake I've ever made was because I couldn't wait for the product to be finished.
Yeah. I did restoration for years and enjoyed doing that a lot, just working with the woods, and always had a particular hard time finding out what type of finish on
yes.
certain pieces is right. Because
some works on some yeah. and some doesn't work on another.
Right. And if it's a period piece and you want to do an orange shellac,
right.
you want to make it look period, and then you have to tell the people they can't put anything wet on it.
Right.
So what do you use for finishes generally?
Usually tung oil and some type of polyurethane. There's also a thing called Good Stuff that's a synthetic oil, and it has polyurethane in it, and you just rag it on. Comes in tins, and I've been using that a lot, and it's also food safe. So I make a lot of cutting boards for friends and for gifts and stuff like that. So the Good Stuff works works really good for that. But I'm always trying something different. I've done some lacquer. I can't spray in my shop because my shop's too dirty.
Yeah.
You really need to have a pristine...
spray booth.
Yeah, a spray booth and a pretty pristine environment. So that's why I stick with, using a hand-rubbed oil finish. But that, to me, is my favorite part of building something. You know, I call my wife out there after I put the first coat of finish on it because it just...
Well, it brings out the
grain. It's so amazing. And the more coats you put, you know, the more clarity it gets.
Yeah.
The other thing I discovered is grain looks different if you hand plane something as opposed to sand it, because the ends of the fibers of wood, instead of being mashed by the rocks and the sandpaper and being frayed at the ends, they're cleanly cut. So it actually looks more radiant.
Really? So do you do some hand planing?
I do.
Really?
It took me about a year to learn how to even sharpen hand planes. But for highly figured woods, they're good. I also use a card scraper, which...
Oh, yeah. I know what that is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's great to use for highly figured woods, because otherwise you get what they call tear out, which I'm sure you're familiar with. The other cool advance in woodworking is insertable carbide cutting heads. Instead of it being one long knife across the planer or joiner, which is incredibly loud, it's a spiral head with a bunch of indexed little, like the size of your thumbnail, carbide heads that has a hole for a screw through the center of it. So really only a couple of inches of blade are touching the wood at one time. So you and I could be having a conversation in the wood shop right now while something is going through the planer. It's that much more quiet. And I don't know if it's the angle that it attacks the wood at, or because it's carbide and it can be so much sharper, it doesn't tear out wood like the old style joiner and planer knives used to do. But sometimes, like I said, I like to use a hand tool for stuff. But I don't know how they did it back in the pre-industrial revolution. It's those guys must have been so talented. Well, I suppose, you were an apprentice for 5 years before you were even allowed to work on stuff.
Oh, sure. You may work on a drawer or something.
Yeah.
Now, I know personally a friend of mine made a copy of the Brown Secretary. The Brown Secretary was a Chippendale, Rhode Island piece. It was the most expensive piece of furniture ever sold. It sold for $12 million.
Oh, my God.
All the people in the country, they chose Alan Breed to make the exact copy for the family.
Really?
And he said he lived with the piece while he was making it.
Yeah.
And he made the exact copy, and he said he kept scratching his head, how did they do this?
Yeah.
How did they do this? Because of all, all the, not just all the secret compartments and everything, but the construction of it was just amazing.
Just to get a board flat using hand tools is incredibly difficult.
Oh, you think of the pit sawing all the way through the... the hand planing and it has to be dried right, like you talked about.
Yes. And then you have to stop and sharpen the blade, every half hour, hour, if you want it to really cut and not tear at the wood.
Right.
You know.
And so do you, as far as the joints, what type of joints do you use, like rabbit joints?
I love mortise and tenon.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
The other thing that I like about mortise and tenon, and sometimes I'll pin them, but sometimes I leave them free so that the wood can expand. If you look at the table, the end table that I made that has the Japanese lamp in it, what supports that top piece is a cross piece that goes into the side through mortise and tenon, and it's not glued. And that's specifically because the top piece is so wide, it's like, I don't know, maybe 15 inches wide. Mm-hmm. It's so when that expands and contracts, mm-hmm. it will go with it. It won't yeah. it won't tear at the wood.
Yeah, a lot of times. Oh, by the way, everyone, handshapedfurniture.com is the website where you'll see images of Paul's furniture. I made tables myself mm-hmm. Years ago, and I would take attic floorboards uh-huh. out of colonial houses, and I'd hand plane them.
Oh my!
And I made harvest tables, and I'd use a maple base, and I'd use new wood on the base, uh-huh. and taper legs, and I'm trying to think of what it's called, finger joints.
Yes, I love finger joints.
Pin the finger joints. Yeah. But what I found out really quickly, without even thinking, is I was fastening my top with glue, which is really, really not
yeah.
smart
yeah.
because it moves.
Yes.
And so, you know, I found out I had one of my own tables in my house, and I found out that I had to go back to all the tables.
Yes.
And take them apart
uh-huh.
and give them breathing room with the screws
yep.
and, so they could expand and contract.
Yeah.
So
you learn.
Yeah.
You live and learn. And they make this great little piece now called a figure eight that I'm not going to try to describe it, but it allows for, it's a little piece of hardware you put underneath table.
Oh, yes, I know exactly what
okay.
you mean.
Okay,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
And they
allow
it screws down on the apron,
yeah.
and it screws onto the top. Like
yeah.
It's shaped like a figure eight.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So it's two screws, so it can
yeah.
it can move.
Yeah.
It can pivot.
Yeah, that's a good
yeah.
idea.
Yeah.
yeah. So is there anything in particular you're thinking that you want to make that you haven't tried yet?
A chair.
Yeah.
You know, I look at mid-century modern chairs, and it's just so beautiful, and it's so, mm-hmm. You want to have it, but, you know, I don't mm-hmm. want to spend $9,000 for a chair,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but I don't even know where to begin to make the chairs the way those guys did,
mm-hmm.
But I'm going to try.
Now, have you ever bought something and tried to copy what they do as far as the work goes?
I haven't. The closest that I came was when I was designing the end table and the DVD cabinet that I built was I took the Danish chairs that I have, and I liked some of the curves mm-hmm. on them. So when I made the template for the parts, I took the chair apart, and I used some of the curves for it. And I also mm-hmm. measured how thick that wood was because just a difference of an eighth of an inch in the wood you use completely changes it. It can make it look clunky, or it can make it look organic and,
sure.
and beautiful and perfectly proportioned.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found out that 7/8 is a really nice mm-hmm. thickness mm-hmm. for legs.
Yeah. Now, have you ever tried a lathe?
I have not. I take that back. When I was a kid, a neighbor had one, but mm-hmm. My garage that I do my woodworking in mm-hmm. is pretty small, and it's just I just don't have enough room, and I don't have enough desire to do bowls and legs, and
sure.
I'm not a fan of spindled legs,
mm-hmm.
but I've seen some I like, but I see way more legs that I hate than legs
mm-hmm.
that I like,
mm-hmm.
and most of the legs that have been done on lathes, I'm not a huge fan of.
Yeah. Now, does your wife mind not having a garage?
No, she jokes. She
yeah.
jokes about, you know, because sometimes I'll go, hey, can you put this away? You know, this thing that's been out on the table. And she'll be like, really? You have a recording studio and a woodworking studio. And you're going to, oh, all right, I'm sorry. I'm
yeah.
sorry.
Yeah. So you record there as well?
Yeah, I record music, and I've done some comedy CDs
mm-hmm.
In there.
Yeah, yeah. Briefly, I just want to talk on this podcast about one of your characters that I get a lot
sure.
of amusement out of, is Representative Richard Martin.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I first heard you, although I've seen you on Dinner and a Movie for years.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you come up with that skit?
It was 2004, and I was at a club in L.A., and I was like the third comedian in a row, and this was when Bush was in his first term.
Mm-hmm.
I was like the third comedian in a row that got up and went on the same diatribe about the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm.
And I got off stage and I was like, what can I do that's different? How can I voice these opinions that I have that's different? And then I thought, why don't I become the guy?
Yeah.
Because I know these guys. I grew up with them. I golf with them. You know, some of them are my friends. I know how they dress. I know how they walk. I know the language they use. Yeah. And so I went to an open mic and around the corner from my house, and I knew exactly how this guy dressed. I went to Joseph Banks, got all the clothes, and I had some friends come with me. And it was kind of a rough open mic night, and I almost bailed because nobody was listening to the comedians. And the little voice in my head said, just try it. Then you'll never know if you don't try.
Yeah.
And so I went up, and literally within 10 seconds of being on stage, you could hear a pin drop. Because there was no Stephen Colbert yet, you know, and Jon Stewart wasn't. While he was there, it, you know, it hadn't really kind of reached the fevered pitch that it was.
Mm-hmm.
You could see it was cathartic for these people, you know, and they got it right away.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really fun because it was like I had come up with my picket sign in a way that was fun for me, because I've always loved subtle satire. Mm-hmm. Spinal Tap to me is one of the greatest pieces of comedy of the 20th century. The satire, you know, to me the ultimate compliment is that people think that my character is real, that it's a real congressman.
And they do. Yeah.
And to me, that tells you, if you're doing satire, that tells you that you're doing a good job.
Yeah. I was just for our listeners, I have another podcast I do that Paul was on as Representative Richard Martin. And as that played for only a few days, I got an email from someone that was kind of irate.
Yeah. Yeah. My manager, the guy that answers his phones, said to me the other day, he said, if I had a nickel for every time somebody called asking whether or not you're real.
Would they vote for you or not?
Yeah.
You never know.
I get people that hate me that don't get it, and I get people that love me that don't know it's fake.
Oh, you're kidding.
Oh, I get all kinds.
Really?
Yeah, and then I get people that get it and don't like it, and I get people that get it and love it. So
jeez,
I get.
You may want to run for office. Just
get the full spectrum, yeah.
Yeah. Well, getting back to Danish Martin, what made you fall in love with it initially? The design of Danish Martin,
that it looked like a human being made it, and not not a machine. Yeah. That it looked like, I think it looks like bones almost. A really cool Danish modern chair, like especially Finn Jules, his just the way things, the proportions and the. I don't know what the right word is, the organic quality of it. It looks like it comes from nature and mm-hmm. not from a computer or, you know, a industrialized machine. And the woods they used, that, you know, they were using great woods, teak and Brazilian rosewood, which sadly has become pretty much extinct now. But there's still a ton of great woods. I think we were talking about walnut earlier. I still think walnut is a fantastic wood to work with. And out here in California, we have a Clara walnut, which is especially beautiful. Mm. It has its own peculiar kind of grain patterns and colors, and you get some purples and really, really cool stuff.
Now, when I was talking to a guitar maker, he said Martin Guitar bought the last legal Brazilian rosewood there was.
I'm sure. But you don't need, I think, East Indian rosewood or ebony are just as good for a guitar fretboard, although ebony is actually probably just as scarce, if not more scarce, than Brazilian rosewood. Yeah. But they're growing on plantations. They're growing East Indian rosewood.
Mm-hmm.
And teak and a lot of these other woods.
Now, have you used teak at all?
Yeah, I have. Actually, I built a bath tray for my wife so she can set her candle and her, you know, mug of coffee or tea and read her book in the bath.
All right. And, I want one of those.
Yeah. It's I actually have started using it. It's pretty nice. And, you know, the great thing about teak is it gets wet and it doesn't matter.
That's right.
And this piece, I have yet to see... in a store, I didn't know what I had when I bought it, but it must have been Burmese teak. because there's a quality to Burmese teak that you do not get in other teaks. There's a chocolatey color to it, and a darkness to the veins in the grain that Burmese teak has. And this piece is just the most beautiful piece of teak. I just wish I had a huge slab of it, because I would love to make some furniture out of it.
Yeah. Now, do you go to a certain place to buy your woods?
I go all over. There mm-hmm. are places in Los Angeles that I go to, but a lot of places I shop on the web.
Really?
Yeah. Because
I would never think of that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, now, because
they ship it? Or?
Yeah, and their overhead is so much less than a brick-and-mortar store in Los Angeles.
Wow.
So I order stuff from Northern California and Oregon quite frequently, especially because if you're using a wood like maple or Clara walnut, the tree was felled probably 20 miles from where the lumberyard is.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
you're getting better prices on it. There's some fantastic places out there to get wood from. Wow. eBay, I've had some so-so kind of experiences.
You can buy wood on eBay?
Oh, yeah. I've bought a lot of wood on eBay.
Wow.
But sometimes people don't know what they have.
Sure.
You know, somebody sent me, they said that it was Cuban mahogany,
mm-hmm.
and it arrived, and it was not. It was Honduran mahogany, which is still a beautiful wood, but
nowhere near
the rarity of Cuban mahogony. So
I really like Santo Domingan mahogany.
I don't know if I've seen that.
It's what they made a lot of Chippendale furniture with. As a matter of fact, we're talking about the piece of furniture in my car.
Uh-huh.
The first thing I did was when I lifted the top, it's a card table, lifted the top, I felt how heavy it is, and I know right away it was Santo Domingo mahogany.
Have you ever...
It's the heaviest mahogany.
It is.
Very, very heavy. Yeah.
Have you ever come across the wood Ipe? IPE is how it's spelled. It's Brazilian hardwood that's now replacing teak for decking.
Really?
It is the heaviest, strongest. It's rated 40 years underwater.
Wow. It's like ironwood or something?
It's amazing. Apparently, there's a lot of silica, and it absolutely destroys your cutting tools.
You have to diamond tip everything.
Yeah, you pretty much do. But it will, if you build a deck, your great-great-grandchildren will walk on that deck.
Wow.
And it will have not moved an inch.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Wow. Well, it's much better using something like that instead of the treated stuff is...
Yeah.
Who knows what's in that chemicals,
Yeah, and there are woods, too, that are dangerous on their own. I use wengi, an African hardwood.
For breathing in while you're milling it?
Yeah, and I was... my eyesight got a little blurry, and... a couple of months later, I was reading that it can cause giddiness and visual disturbances.
Well, giddiness you already have.
Yeah. So, you got to be careful. And redwood, I didn't know how dangerous redwood was for inhaling. It is, huh? Yeah. Well, dangerous might not be you don't want to be around redwood sawdust for a long time breathing it in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I kept thinking I was getting a cold every time. And then I started to realize, it's every time I work with redwood.
Well, I bet you would like to work with redwood too, wouldn't you? I mean, being in California.
Redwood is good for certain things. It's great for fences, mm-hmm. As long as I don't have to bear any type of large weight.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for...
Unless it's really thick, right?
Even if it's thick, it doesn't hold screws that well, unless the screw is going the direction that gravity is.
Mm-hmm.
If it's perpendicular to where the gravity is, and there's a lot of weight, it's not a good choice of woods, because that screw will start to loosen. Like for a gate, mm-hmm. it's I don't think it's a really good choice for a heavy swinging gate, because mm-hmm. it'll start to pull out of the screws.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a ton of other woods that are just fantastic.
Yeah. Now, I would have never, ever thought you could buy wood on eBay for one.
Yeah.
What don't they sell? And it's funny, the way the world is today, it's like, why wouldn't wood be online?
Absolutely.
Why wouldn't it be on eBay?
And yeah. Yeah. There is nothing like that feeling when a big piece of wood that you ordered arrives, or a piece of furniture.
Mm-hmm.
I have a... credenza. I think is it a credenza? A little side table that has a little thing in the top where you could put plants, and there's a little three little drawers off to the side But it's made out of Brazilian rosewood, and I saw it online somewhere, and I bought it, and just love it. It just has that mid-century look, where just the proportions, everything about it is just beautiful. And I kind of wanted to have something made out of Brazilian rosewood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's the other thing I love about making furniture is if you make it with good quality solid wood and good craftsmanship, mm-hmm. it's going to last a lifetime and more.
Yeah,
and most people don't understand that. They, you know, when they go to buy at IKEA, they think they're saving money, but they're not, because you're going to have 10 IKEA coffee tables in your lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
If you bought one solid, well-crafted piece of furniture in your 20s, you would have it for your entire life, and it would cost way less than all the IKEA ones that fall apart.
That's right. You know, many, many times on this podcast, I've ragged on IKEA.
Yeah.
And one of them is, and no offense to IKEA lovers out there, but one of the things is a moving company, most moving companies will not move IKEA furniture because it falls apart.
Yeah, it does. It's
So why not invest in something? And you're talking about a lifetime. I think many lifetimes.
Yes.
When it's something well-crafted and handmade.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the 1950s stuff that's going to be around for 200 years more, probably. Yeah. You know.
And you can make stuff that's collapsible with wedged mortise and tenon.
Yeah.
Let me show
just
you this.
Just pop it apart. And
just pop that wedge out of the tenon.
Yeah,
one of the pieces I have in my garage is that way. So if I need to break it down.
Like a trestle table or anything like that. In Europe, they had things pop apart because of the stairways and things, you know, for centuries.
So. Yeah. I was in a lumber yard once, and it had a sign that said, you only have to pay for quality once.
Yeah.
And I like that.
That's a nice phrase.
Yeah.
I think on that, we probably should end.
That's right.
All right, everyone. This is Martin Willis with Paul Gilmartin, and we're signing off.